This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Additional $58 million to boost security for members of the executive and judicial branches being requested from Congress by the Trump administration following the killing of Charlie Kirk. That's from sources familiar to ABC News. Kirk's accused killer has a court hearing Tuesday. Tyler Robinson not cooperating, says Utah Governor Spencer Cox, who says more info from the FBI crime lab is expected.
We're collecting much more, including forensic evidence that is coming back from Quantico that will help us tie the shooter to the weapon and everything else.
Poland's president has signed a measure permitting a number of NATO troops to stay in Poland to defend against Russian drone attacks, says Poland's National Security Bureau. A year after high prices was a political issue, egg, coffee, apple, ground beef, tomato, and other prices are even higher, says the Labor Department. This is ABC News. More on the Los Angeles death of a school-aged child due to a rare progressive brain disorder called SSPE. It can occur months or years after an initial infection of measles. Dr. Nava Yagana, the L.A. County Department of Public Health.
It starts off with personality changes, emotional outbursts, and then there tends to be like motor changes, potentially seizures as well. And then from there, it keeps on, you know, unfortunately progressing.
TV's biggest night is tonight, the annual Emmy Awards. ABC's Will Gans.
Only Murders in the Building up for Best Comedy. But it's got stiff competition in the studio. Seth Rogen's spoofy love letter to Hollywood, and he's up for Best Actor in a Comedy. As for Best Actress in a Comedy, Jean Smart looking to take home Emmy number 4 for Hacks. But it's a stacked category from Emmy winner Quinta Brunson to Emmy winner Ayoa Debrie.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Louisiana versus Calais, C-A-L-L-A-I-S, could deal a death blow to the impact, the power, the capacity of the Supreme Court to decide Voting Rights Act cases. This is one of those times when the Supreme Court needs to hear from the public about the appropriate resolution of this major case that could compromise the Voting Rights Act going forward beyond Louisiana.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. Experts are warning that active clubs, those white nationalist groups disguised as fitness and brotherhood organizations, are spreading rapidly in Wisconsin and nationally. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
Experts say they're seeing a rise in white nationalist movements in Wisconsin and across the country that are disguising themselves as fitness groups. They're called active clubs and present themselves as sporting clubs or fighting clubs focused on brotherhood. Art Gibson, professor of sociology and criminology at the University of Dayton, says they recruit both online and in person, targeting young white men using shared interests as tools to gradually introduce and normalize racist ideologies.
Add to that the willingness to engage in violence against people of color, LGBTQ people. There's a clear potential for violence here.
Gibson says active clubs often meet in Christian churches and gyms, with recent activity showing multi-state coordination, like a Wisconsin active club regularly meeting with an Illinois active club for family days. They use distinctive symbols like the Celtic cross, a well-known neo-Nazi symbol, and share content across social media platforms to maintain connections between chapters and other white supremacists. supremacist groups. Gypsum says the groups are a huge shift in organizing for white supremacists and white nationalists following what he calls a decentralized leaderless resistance. Gypsum says new chapters of active clubs are frequently being created and linking with one another. Members say they are dedicated to self-improvement and brotherhood, seeing themselves as a noble resistance in the cause of preserving the white race. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Find more news anytime at civicmedia.us.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows around 60. Sunshine for Monday, highs in the mid-80s. Partly cloudy, 59 Monday night. On Tuesday, sunny with a high near 86. Wednesday, mostly sunny, 85. Slight chance of a shower on Thursday with a high near 83. Currently 83 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
We're joined at 5 p.m. by Wisconsin Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ryan Sternad. We dig into why he's running and what he proposes for Wisconsin's future.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
We move on to the second hour of the Civic Media Spotlight. We start this hour with the Matinee on Air show with Jane and Greg. Marilyn Hayden and Jeremiah X. Gomez of Groundswell Collective joins Matinee on Air to talk about their work to get Sunday hours added in Walworth County for those who need access to transit and have no other option. From January to June of this year, ridership on Sundays have increased 475%, and it is all thanks to these folks.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinee on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinee, who is currently out vacating, resting, relaxing, deservingly, and we are here to welcome you back to the show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a lot coming up here today. At 10:52, we have This Shouldn't Be a Thing, which we are going to be featuring the Brick by Brick edition today, so you don't want to go anywhere. If you want to get in touch with us, call or text 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, and you can also leave a comment on the live stream. We are currently on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform in this house we still call Twitter. Very, very excited to have our next guests here. They are from the group Groundswell Collective, and they got in touch. We saw a press release come through by way of them about bus services in Walworth County. Yeah. And then when I kept reading and we kept talking about it, there's so much they're working with. Groundswell Collective is here today. Our guests are Jeremiah Gomez.
That's correct.
And Marilyn Hayden.
Hayden.
My mistake, ma'am. My mistake. They are here today to talk about the work that Groundswell does, as well as all the initiatives they're working on, as well as just, as I said earlier, the power of people and the power of organizing, coming together to make change. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you both here today.
Oh, we're thrilled. Thank you.
Now, before we get started with the bus service discussion, as well as all the other things you're working at, tell us about Groundswell Collective. What do you do? Who do you service? And what is your ultimate goal?
Well, Groundswell, I think in a nutshell, is really just a group of people who have a shared desire to see the people of Walworth County thrive.
Yeah.
And so it's a group of people from many different ages, stages, and backgrounds who have found this shared affinity to say, what does it look like for us to pursue the thriving of our community together, especially those who may be underserved or kind of forgotten.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, especially in today's day and age, and we need to come together even more so as communities, as we're seeing various programs, funding's being cut. It's important to look around and say, all right, how do I involve myself with the people around me? And that's something that looking at what you're doing is exactly the plan, is saying, all right, let's take care of each other, because we might be all that we have. And I don't want to say you can't rely upon government, but it shouldn't be a
in situations like this, it's where we say, it's like, all right, we have to step forward and do the work first and take the bull by the horn.
Sure. And I think I can't speak for Maryland, but I think, you know, for me, I was entering into a space where there's a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of concern. I'm seeing that among the people I love and serve. And I've got to say, by connecting with people like her mm-hmm. and the others in our network, it's given me a renewed sense of hope and yeah. peace. As we say, there is an opportunity to lean forward and mm-hmm. to see the very best as yet to come as we come together. And that's been really fun to see.
Marilyn, how is what do you, as far as the group goes, what are you involved with? What are you working on? What do you do for Groundswell Collective?
Well, right now I'm interested in the transportation. Mm-hmm. I'm visually impaired, legally blind, and I don't drive. So that put me in that category of people who are grounded mm-hmm. because we have no way to get places.
And that's something that, you know, I've been in part of the conversation with for so long. I used to work for city government here in Racine.
Okay.
And one of the big, we saw the bus services being cut because mm-hmm. of cuts from the state. We saw the state saying no thank you to a plan that it was very much in the infancy. There was no real blueprint, but we just said, how about we take some of all this money that you're putting towards rebuilding our roads and widening our freeways, how about we bring a metro line up to Racine so people Ooh. From Racine could possibly have transportation to Chicago to get yeah. jobs? Like, that was, transportation was always something that was very high up on the mayor who I worked for, on his list. And it consistently is slapped down. I feel mm-hmm. like transportation, especially in busing situations, for folks like yourself, Marilyn, who you need that access. A lot of times our leaders don't truly understand how important it is, because I don't think it doesn't affect them to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And the lobbying that comes from them don't have the money that, say, you know, a gun lobby or a roads lobby has. So it's up to folks like yourself to come together, organize, and speak on behalf of folks like yourself, Marilyn, who need this transportation. And that's what you did. Mm-hmm. And that's what you did in Woolworth. And not only, and I don't want to give away the whole story, but it came together and it worked in stunning fashion. Can you tell yes. the story of what you all did to get more bus, to get more more hours on the buses in Woolworth County?
Yeah, I mean, well, it started with an awareness that Woolworth County was the only county within its kind of status that didn't have a Sunday transportation option yeah. for people.
No, wait, none?
It did not have a public Sunday transportation option. Right.
Oh, God. I just figured, okay,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, so this is moving from something that wasn't available yeah. to, I can't remember quite what the numbers are, Marilyn, but I think it was, in January when it finally kicked off, I think it was around, did we say 20 riders?
20, I think.
And then in June, up to 200 mm-hmm. In round figures. Yeah. So that shows that there's a real need there. How that happened were folks like Marilyn showing up at those county board meetings, budget meetings, mm-hmm. but it took really connecting with her and friends that she had and friends that we had and saying, we want our leaders to know this is a real felt need, that there are real faces and stories mm-hmm. who are connected to this need. And they were responsive.
And that, I think, is the most impressive. I shouldn't be impressed by that, but I'm impressed by leaders who listen nowadays. Mm. When you hear elected officials, whether they are local, state, or federal, listening to the people and saying, all right, Marilyn, you have a need. How do we meet that need? And I want to read the numbers because I have it in the press release here. In January, in Woolworth County, when this program started, because as you said, there was no Sunday ridership
Correct.
Whatsoever, mm-hmm. which to me is mind-blowing, because I guess they just expected you to stay home. It was 40 trips that month in January. By June of this year, it was 229. In less than half a year, it went up by 472.5%.
Yeah.
That shows, one, to me, the power of organizing, doing exactly what you did. The leaders listening and implementing, and it becoming a return on investment, because, you know, like you have to pay for the buses, the servicing, mm-hmm. the people who did it. But it obviously, with 472.5% increase, that is a net benefit for everyone, whether you're riding or you're repairing the bus.
Or you have an employee who needs to be able to get to work, mm-hmm. or you're somebody who's looking to go to church and can't connect into yeah. meaningful community in that way. So we really have seen it be a beautiful thing.
I mean, what are you hearing from, as far as the Sunday services? Because, you know, as I said before, in my experience, watching especially like evening hours being cut because they look at what are the easiest days, what are the easiest hours, and they don't want to do midday, they don't want to do weekdays, but evening hours, weekends, it's easy to cut. Do you see yourself expanding? Are there other needs for the bus services that are in Woolworth County that is needed besides Sunday? Or is this like, all right, we've got this done, let's move on to the next thing?
I think there's a desire to see those services expand. Yeah. I think Marilyn would be better positioned to speak to that as a user of that.
I've been using the bus service for some time because we have had it. And originally it was, I probably think maybe 15 or 20 years that I've been familiar with it. It really started out as transportation for handicapped people and seniors.
Yeah.
Just in doctor's appointments and that type of thing. So it has expanded over time. And it's gotten better all the time, but it's still, I was really pleased to, when it expanded to, other people that, maybe just didn't have a car or whatever and had other reasons to get from place to place. And that was, so that was very good in that, but it was still weekdays. And then they, expanded it to Saturdays. And over the last few years, and then Sundays, when we found out that it needed a little bit of a push. So we were really glad that they expanded it to Sundays. And then Sundays is not just for church services, but other activities as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is for me personally, that makes me feel very good that it's something where you as a user of the bus system are seeing it grow and expand and service the community and beyond just its original group, but for everybody who needs it or everybody who just wants it too. I mean, some people want to take the bus. Some people are like, I don't need a car. I have a close family member who is perfectly able to drive, but she's like, I'd rather take the bus. I'd rather take the train. She also lives in a city that has wonderful and high tech transportation. Mass transit is a whole other discussion point we can get to when it comes to Wisconsin. But if you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, we're speaking to Jeremiah Gomez and Marilyn Hayden from Groundswell Collective. And they're talking about all the work they're doing. And really, we're talking about the power of organizing, the power of people coming together and working towards a goal. And the goal of getting Sunday service in Walworth County, which the fact that there was nothing blows my mind. I mean, it just like to me. A county saying we're not going to be able to take people around on Sunday is, I want to say, borderline offensive because I feel like it puts aside a whole group of individuals who need that access. To me, mass transit, local transit, bus services are something that is vital in a community. And you came together with 472.5% increase to show for it. And that's just wonderful to listen to. It's wonderful to read. I'm so happy you all could be here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah. There are other things that you are all working on. It is not just about busing. It is about a whole host of other, you basically have a whole, you know, platter of things you're discussing. And we're going to keep that conversation going. If you have any questions for Groundswell Collective, because if you live in areas around Wisconsin, and you want to know more, but this is about organizing and ask your questions. We want to hear from you. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. We're on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform we still call Twitter. And how long has Groundswell Collective been around as a group?
I mean, it really launched organically out of the Sunday transportation thing.
Yeah.
And so I could look back and see when we started formally, but it's not that long. I think we've been connecting probably for about a year.
Yeah.
That's great.
Is really what we've been doing.
I mean, and you think about that too, in the world of organizing to get together over the past year and a half and you've already achieved this. That shows the community that you mean business and you can get things done by working together. And if you want to find out more, you can go to their Facebook page. They are on Facebook, Groundswell Collective, and you can follow them. You can find out what's going on. If you live in Woolworth County, you can absolutely get in touch with them, get in touch with us, find out more. But we are talking to Groundswell Collective right now. We're going to come back and discuss, I believe there's going to be a child care summit coming up and then a call for a day of action for care. And we will be talking more about that with Jeremiah Gomez and Marilyn Hayden. And you are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you want to call or text, give us a call, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Don't go far. Stay close. Stay tuned. You're listening to us on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matinee on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
Does Donald Trump's big bill provide the largest federal spending cut in U.S. history? No. Spending cuts in the bill that Trump signed wouldn't be the largest ever, despite claims by Republican U.S. Representative Scott Fitzgerald. The original House version would have nominally cut over $1.6 trillion over 10 years. The final version cut even less, $1.2 trillion. With $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, the act will increase federal debt by a massive $3.3 trillion over the next decade. Nonpartisan analysts say the plan's cuts would rank behind a 2011 law's $2 trillion in spending cuts. As a percentage of GDP, it doesn't rank in the top 5%. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Learn more at wisconsinwatch.org.
My name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires, a collection of wealthy Americans who share a profound concern about the dangers of concentrated wealth and power in America. Now, the fact is, you may not care how much money another person has, but you likely do care how much power another person has, especially if they're using that power to rig the rules of the economy to make themselves richer and you poorer. You see, there is a point where money is no longer money, it's power. And when rich people use their money to drown out the voices of everyday people, it threatens the safety and security of us all. Patriotic millionaires don't want to live in a country with a few extremely rich people controlling everything, leaving millions of people struggling to just get by. Luckily, we have a solution. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We move on to the WXCO Morning Report. Chad Holmes introduces a new member of the Civic Media team who will be following what is going on in central Wisconsin with WXCO. And that is news reporter Isabella Nieto.
Good morning and welcome to the WXCO Morning Report, part of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. I am Chad Holmes. Across the way, behind the glass, is our in-studio engineer and producer, Ian Welsh. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
We will have more with you coming up in just a little bit, but normally, here in our building, for a long time, it was just me and you. Over the last number of months, we've been able to add to our team as joining us in terms of our sales has been Aaliyah helping us with our sales over the last number of months. And now in the last week, we have also been adding a news reporter, a brand new news reporter. And I thought maybe it'd be nice to introduce her to our listeners here in the morning, Isabella Nieto. And Isabella, good to have you across the table.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And you just started here last week.
Yes, I did.
You are a new news reporter. And I was just a thought for folks, what's your background? Where do you come from before heading here to Wausau?
So I'm originally from Zion, Illinois, which is in the northeasternmost county in Illinois. I grew up right along the Wisconsin border. For college, I went to Bradley University in central Illinois, Peoria, Illinois. And then for grad school, I got my master's in public affairs reporting at the University of Illinois Springfield.
There's an old saying, if it plays in spring, plays in Peoria.
Yes, if it plays in Peoria.
What was it like being in Peoria? Is that the case that it is somewhat, I guess when you say if it plays in Peoria, that has that middle of the country feel for the folks? Did you find it that way as sort of a down home place to, kind of cut your teeth?
Yeah, it is a place where a lot of people, business owners or, performers and people who are looking to try out new ideas to come and test things out, see how it plays, see how people receive it. I definitely remember covering a lot of new businesses who are coming to see if their ideas will work in other areas or in other states as well.
Also, you mentioned Springfield, and that is the state capital in Illinois. How much work did you do at the state capital?
I did a lot of work at the state capitol. Half of my master's program was working for the Illinois State House Press Corps as one of the reporters. I worked for WBEZ Chicago. It was a remote internship, so I covered state and local politics for WBEZ, things going on in Chicago as well as what was going on under the dome.
What were some of the most interesting stories you've covered in your run-up before you start really delving into some of the interesting stories here in central Wisconsin?
Yeah, one of my long-term stories that I worked on throughout my internship with WBEZ was about these, a legislator wanted to bring some overdose prevention sites to Illinois. He wanted to propose legislation to open up these areas where people could safely consume illegal drugs. They would be awarded a type of immunity. There were a lot of conversations happening throughout the entire legislative session about what the immunity and things like that would look like, what the legislation would actually look like. It didn't end up making it to the floor by the end of it. The budget needed to be passed, and it got kind of pushed to the back. But according to the legislator, at the time anyway, he said he would try to bring it back up again before a year's end. So we'll see if that comes up one more time before the next legislative session.
Do you find yourself, and I think I kind of have an idea about this, that government, whether it's a state government or local government, you found yourself very interested in that. What was it about these kind of stories and maybe that kind of angles on the news or that part of the news that kind of drew you in?
I think local government is a really interesting thing to cover, not only because there's always something going on and there's always something interesting to dig into, but I also see it from a very human standpoint. My mom is in local county government, so and one of my first jobs was working as an election materials runner, so bringing things in on election night, several election nights during high school. Learning about the people, learning about the election process. I've always just thought it was really interesting, and it's something that, I like to think that I'm good at covering. And I'm really looking forward to getting into city council and local government here in Wausau.
Something else that we've learned, in the process to bring you in discussions is that radio was not the ultimate goal for you that in terms of your work in journalism, that this came as a little bit of a surprise that you found yourself enjoying this part of journalism. Could you talk about what kind of drew you into this kind of journalism and maybe the other kinds of journalism that you've experienced and that kind of got you involved in that realm from the beginning?
Sure. So like you said, I wasn't expecting to get into radio. I wasn't expecting to get into broadcast at all. During my undergrad years at Bradley University, I was really planning on going into print media. I really wanted to be writing these long form feature stories. And then one day I was just sort of walking to the rec center, and the local NPR affiliate had a reporter outside of the rec center, and they were doing a mock interview for photos for their website. And so they were asking people, hey, will you do this fake interview with us really quick? And, we'll just take pictures of the back of your head, not a big deal. And so I did it. And they said, oh, thank you so much for helping us. And I said, oh, no worries. I'm a journalism major, so I'm happy to help out wherever. And they said, oh, would you like an internship? And she handed me her card. And the next spring, I started as a reporting intern for WCBU Peoria Public Radio.
Is that interesting that in this case, maybe a career on sort of an accident? And often stories come that way, too, where you may not be looking specifically at a certain area. They come to you through a discussion or somebody that you run into, maybe on the street or in this case, in the courtyard of a college. Stories come from everywhere, don't they?
They really do. Yes. Especially in when I was covering things in Peoria, it was one of the bigger stories at the time was allowing backyard chickens. And that was something I definitely did not ever expect to cover. But it came from a really heated council meeting that I went to, and it, you know, sort of spiraled from there. I wrote a few stories on the surrounding towns proposing similar ideas.
We will have more with our brand new WXCO news reporter, Isabella Nieto, coming up in our next WXCO morning report, coming up at 7:22. Coming up next, it's a top of the hour news update, and then more of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow here on 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Additional $58 million to boost security for members of the executive and judicial branches being requested from Congress by the Trump administration following the killing of Charlie Kirk. That's from sources familiar to ABC News. Kirk's accused killer has a court hearing Tuesday. Tyler Robinson not cooperating, says Utah Governor Spencer Cox, who says more info from the FBI crime lab is expected.
We're collecting much more, including forensic evidence that is coming back from Quantico that will help us tie the shooter to the weapon and everything else.
Poland's president has signed a measure permitting a number of NATO troops to stay in Poland to defend against Russian drone attacks, says Poland's National Security Bureau. A year after high prices was a political issue, egg, coffee, apple, ground beef, tomato, and other prices are even higher, says the Labor Department. This is ABC News.
The Cards close out the series. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers losing to the Cardinals this afternoon, 3-2, here at American Family Field. St. Louis able to snap a five-game losing streak after being swept in Seattle, then losing the first two of three here in Milwaukee. So the Brewers, now the first team in the major leagues to clinch a playoff spot, have tomorrow off, then travel out west to play the Angels in L.A. Tuesday night. On Friday, they'll be in St. Louis to begin a three-game weekend series against the Cardinals, and then the following Monday, they'll be back home to start a series against the San Diego Padres. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers struggled on offense. Center Jake Renfro had to lead the game with an injury. The next two centers had trouble snapping the ball to quarterback Danny O'Neill. Alabama got rolling and beat the Badgers 38-14.
Well, that's obviously not easy to swallow, and the truth of the matter is, I told those guys that was a much better team than we are right now.
That's the Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Superman and Lex Luthor teaming up together? What is this world coming to? Before you know it, cats and dogs will be living together. Variety has announced that the sequel for this summer's hit Superman is in motion. If you thought the first one was a spectacle, the follow-up promises an even bigger nemesis will face off against the unlikely duo. James Gunn's Superman, starring David Corenswet, made $613 million worldwide and was a big first swing for the DC Universe, a company where Gunn currently serves as co-CEO. James Gunn says the sequel will be as much a Lex Luthor film as it will be a Superman film. The director says he loved working with Nicholas Holt, who played Luthor, and really identified with the Luthor character. Yikes. A couple other tidbits from Gunn's Superman world. The director says Supergirl, starring Millie Alcock, is on the schedule to be released in 2026. Superman, A Man of Tomorrow, will start filming in 2026 and be released in 2027. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows around 60. Sunshine for Monday, highs in the mid-80s. Partly cloudy, 59 Monday night. On Tuesday, sunny with a high near 86. Wednesday, mostly sunny, 85. Slight chance of a shower on Thursday with a high near 83.
Right now, it's 84.
This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
The author of Bowling Alone says, let's foster new forms of electronic entertainment and communication that reinforce community engagement. Well, that's Civic Media. That's Up North News, trying to get more of us off the couch, give you good information while you are listening, but then to step up, get out there into your community, and bring a friend to the voting booth.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show...
I'm back.
Oh yeah, that's right. Jane is back, and we catch up on all the news she missed while she was away. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the Todd Alba Show. Todd welcomes Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley to talk about his newly announced run for governor of Wisconsin. Listen in for his answers to some of the toughest questions he'll be facing.
Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Now 35 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 10th. Zommer's on the board. Glad to have you along. A quick update on our top breaking news story of the day. According to the Deseret.com, a publication from Utah, as well as other major publications and news sources around the country, the founder of TurningPoints.com, conservative commentator, activist Charlie Kirk, was shot earlier this afternoon at an event at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. On-site witnesses, including reporters, confirmed that Kirk was shot in what appeared to be the neck area. His exact status is unknown at this time. We understand there are differing reports out on socials right now, but we are going to stick with the facts as we know them, that Charlie Kirk's status is unknown. There had been an arrest, according to University Police, of a suspect, according now to the Associated Press and others. That suspect has been released. Therefore, it remains a fluid situation that the alleged shooter is still at large there in Utah. And quickly, at least three people are confirmed shot and injured at a Denver area high school this afternoon in Evergreen High School in Colorado, according to St. Anthony's Hospital. We'll continue to provide live updates on Civic Media throughout the afternoon. 36 minutes now past the hour of 3 o'clock. Let us turn a page and turn our attention to Wisconsin politics, a brand new entry into the governor's race here in the state on the Democratic side. Was not necessarily a surprise, nor was it unexpected if you followed what he said over the last few weeks. But David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, entered the race yesterday and joins us live from the great city of Milwaukee. County Executive Crowley, thank you so very much for being here on what has turned out to be a very difficult day news-wise.
Well, first and foremost, I just want to say thank you for having me. And before we really get started, I think we have to acknowledge, you know, my thoughts and prayers are not only with, you know, what happened in Denver, but also with Charlie Kirk. And so, you know, there's no reason why we have this level of hate or level of violence in our country. But we have to push back against the level of political violence that we have seen increase across this country. You know, we may have our differences, and but we have to agree to disagree. We have to focus on how we can move forward together, because this is our state, this is our country, and we have to live in it and share it with one another. So my thoughts and prayers with everyone who has been affected and inflicted violence upon them.
Appreciate those thoughts on the breaking news today, County Executive Crowley. Let's turn a page just for a moment here, because that's why you're here. I appreciate you taking time to come on our program. And I know you're on with our colleague, Pat Kreitlow, on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow earlier this morning. As we say on this show, it's your first time here. So we appreciate that. As we like to say, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you ended up into the public service sector.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was born and raised here in the city of Milwaukee, lifelong Wisconsinite, went to public schools my entire life and had great parents. But they both, you know, struggled with mental health or struggled with drug addiction. And when I was a junior in high school, you know, I had went through so much. You know, we were evicted three times before I graduated high school. There was a lot of housing instability. But it was an organization that literally saved my life called Urban Underground, youth organization that introduced me to community organizing. And working with nonprofits and grassroots organizations on the ground, you know, it translated to getting involved in politics. So in 2010, I decided to go work for Russ Feingold, traveling all across this state, helping to get him reelected. Then I had the opportunity to work for a county board supervisor, Nakia Dodd, who went on to be a state senator. Worked for a year and a half as a legislative aide, 4 years as the political director in her state senate office. And then I got bit by that bug to actually run for office myself. And so in 2016, I was elected to represent the 17th Assembly District. I was also elected to be the chair of our Milwaukee delegation, as well as chair of our Black Legislative Caucus. And in 2019, I leaped before I looked and decided to get into this county exec's race. And I have been serving as the county executive sworn in May 4th, 2020, and was reelected with 85% of the vote in 2024.
I find it interesting and fascinating as a person who is a kind of a political nut. You're Milwaukee's first Black county executive and the youngest person to hold office. You're all of 39 right now, but you're a rising political star in this state. And I think at a time when we have a lot of talk nationally and even at the state level about elder statespeople, shall we say, you bring a unique generational shift in a perspective.
You know, I do. And I appreciate you looking at me as a rising political star in this state. And it's one of the reasons why I got involved in wanting to run for governor. You know, we've been able to tackle many different issues across Milwaukee County. But what's been important is how we've created more partnerships. And, you know, we have to do that. If we want to move our community forward, if we want to move this state forward, it's about stepping outside our geographical comfort zone, being able to agree to disagree. But more importantly, just, you know, learning about one another. One of my favorite quotes is, no one cares what you know until they know how much you care. And, you know, being from an urban area, I've been introduced to rural areas as a kid. My father taking me to La Crosse and taking me all over the state, whether we're going fishing or going duck hunting. And so I have familiarity with rural communities, but this is a great opportunity to enter this race to continue to move our state forward.
So I come from Southwest Wisconsin, but lived in Madison the better part of 20 plus years, but grew up out in Southwest Wisconsin. As my granddad might say to you, what do you say as you go around Wisconsin, County Executive David Crowley, and they look at you and say, so why do you want the job?
which is a great question. One, I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, Governor Evers, he has been a great leader. He has led with a steady, calm strength here in the state of Wisconsin, leading us through the pandemic, helping to protect our democracy and protect, quite frankly, our working families from a lot of harm. You know, I spent 7 years in the state capitol, so I know how Madison works. And I've also gotten things done with a Republican-controlled legislature. And for the past 5 years, I've been leading the largest county in the state of Wisconsin, representing close to 1 million people, which is a sixth of our entire state's population, but also managing one of the largest budgets in the state with a $1.4 billion budget. And so since 2020, I've not only led our community through the pandemic, but we've tackled some of the toughest issues throughout the county: public health, public safety, fiscal recovery. We've invested in small businesses all across Milwaukee County. We've created more affordable housing options. We've made government more accessible. We've cut our carbon emissions in half, all while being able to deliver the largest property tax cut in Milwaukee County's history. And so I know that I am the only candidate with not only legislative experience, but I have experience actually running a government. So on day one, I'll be ready to hit the ground hard and hit the ground running. But I truly believe that the stakes are, quite frankly, they're too high, and we don't have any time to waste as Democrats.
We're talking to Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, who is the latest to entry on the Democratic side in the race for Wisconsin governor. 90-second answers, if you can, or 1 minute, I want to make sure we get a couple of things in here. Okay. But I'm running against the clock. The first one, as you travel around the state, what are the top two, no more than three issues that are on Wisconsin voters' minds in this race for governor?
Well, it's about tackling this affordability crisis that so many folks are going through. You know, people are getting less, even if they're making more. We need to provide them with some type of relief. And it's, we have to acknowledge there's only so much that we can do with this economic chaos that's being inflicted on families under the Trump administration, but it doesn't mean that we can't help families move forward. I know what it's like to struggle, what it's like not to be able to pay your bills or put food on the table. And what we need to be focusing on is, how do we create family-sustaining jobs, good jobs? How do we fully fund our public schools to make sure our young people, our kids, are ready for the jobs of today and tomorrow, and just making things that much more affordable, whether we're talking about healthcare? But I'm looking forward to going across this state you know, learning about the different issues, because there isn't a one size fits all to the solutions that affect every community in this state. And so I want to make sure that as we travel, those who have been impacted, that they are closest to the solutions that can fit their community. We need to right size these solutions for every community.
Know people that know you. I've watched you before. You're not someone who's afraid to tackle tough issues or tough questions. I'm just going to put it out there. You're a person who happens to be Black. I'm a person who happens to be gay. There are people in this race who happen to be women. I know my former party that I left in 2011 very well, and I know that they take those things that can be dividers against each other and manipulate that to win elections. We saw it last time against former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, where they darkened the pigment of his skin, exaggerated things, made up lies to beat him. Do you have a plan for politically inoculating yourself against those types of attacks? And if so, are you willing to share any of them with us?
Well, we are definitely going to be, you know, knocking down any of these attacks. But see, that's what the Republicans do. They want to distract and divide people because this is the only way that they can stay in power, because they're not bringing any substance to the table. You know, they will talk about me being from Milwaukee, me being Black, but that's not putting food on people's table. That's not making sure that they can afford their child care. And the issues that I've been working on here in Milwaukee, these aren't Democratic issues. These aren't Milwaukee issues. These are Wisconsin issues. And so I'm going to go across the entire state and look and let them know, let everybody know that I'm looking to be the governor for all of us. We can't allow these divisions to stop our entire state from moving forward. And so what we're going to focus on is the things that matter. We're going to focus on affordability. We're going to focus on housing. And I know that we're going to be able to get people in part of this campaign, not because of what we've done, but what I know we can do together. And so whether you're a Democrat, an independent, or a Republican, I want folks to know that there's a place in this campaign for you.
Earlier today, Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson endorsed you. There was some thought that you may both enter this race. His endorsement has to be huge for your campaign. There are two counties in a Democratic primary that could really, it comes down to three places, right? It's Milwaukee County, Dane County, and everybody else in a Democratic primary. It has to be a big feather in your campaign early on to get the mayor's endorsement.
It is. I truly appreciate the mayor's belief and inspiration in me for running for this seat. And I think it's no secret that I represent the largest Democratic community in the entire state of Wisconsin, which actually makes me uniquely positioned to bring more Democratic votes out of Milwaukee County. And we're not going to leave no stone unturned. So we're going to continue to travel across this state, and there are going to be more endorsements coming out tonight. And so just wait and see.
We'll stay tuned for that. Let me ask you quickly, ask to other people as well, how do you win a Democratic primary right now where you have a base progressive base that really is quote-unquote angry and wants Democrats to fight harder, they say? How do you win this primary but not so far alienated to the left that you can't win a general?
Well, one, I think I bring, you know, experienced executive leadership, you know, to this race. And we also have to understand that, you know, they're always trying to put labels, but we do need a fighter. But it's not just about fighting against the policies that we see the Trump administration, and the fact that Wisconsin Republicans, they're literally carrying the president's water versus carrying the concerns of the people to the floor. And so the way that we win this race is we're going to talk to everybody. You know, I think that primaries are great for our democracy. It gives voters the opportunity to see the candidates. But whoever that Democratic nominee is, they're going to become that much more better because they went through this primary process. And so we're going to talk about what we've done for Milwaukee County. We're going to cut through all the distractions and divisions and talk about how we need to build a broader table. If we're going to win this race, right, we got to build a coalition, which means we got to unify our base, energize the people on the ground, bring new voices to the table, and figure out ways to bring independence back. And I know that we're going to be able to speak to all of those different categories of people.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, thank you very much for being here. Safe travels around the state of Wisconsin on your gubernatorial run. You have an open mic on this show anytime. We'd love to have you back as the campaign continues.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. I know I'll be back, Ty. Appreciate your work.
We appreciate you very much. David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, latest candidate for governor of the state of Wisconsin. Stay tuned. We have an update on breaking news of Charlie Kirk. We'll tell it to you when we come back. It's the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag.
This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is empty. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. September 4th, Native Nations asked the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold the longstanding right of individuals to bring voting rights complaints to federal court. If the High Court takes the case, its decision could have consequences for voting rights protections under the Voting Rights Act. In 2021, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians and the Spirit Lake Nation negotiated with the state of North Dakota to create voting districts which didn't dilute Native voting power. But after a 2023 Eighth Circuit Court decision in Arkansas, the state of North Dakota reneged on its deal with the tribes. The decision said only the U.S. Justice Department, not individual voters, could bring suits to enforce the VRA. Of 450 VRA Section 2 cases since 1982, only 18 were brought by DOJ. May 14th, a 3-judge appeals panel affirmed that decision, but still only for the Eighth Circuit. After a July 15th stay, the nations asked the High Court on September 4th to take the case. Spirit Lake Nation Chair Lana Jackson Street said, "It is shameful that when we succeeded in court and got a fair map in place, the state turned its attack toward the Voting Rights Act and a person's right to vote free from discrimination. We need the Supreme Court to protect our fundamental right to vote and be heard." We have our past reports on the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
To finish off the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the John and Gordy Show. Marta Hansen, a piano technician and is the owner of the Piano Gal Shop in Sun Prairie, joins John and Gordy to talk about her song Bang Bang that now has video attached to it. She'll be premiering it this coming Saturday at her show in Madison. Told from a mother's point of view, Bang Bang is a haunting meditation on the tragedy of school shootings.
Always working on getting better. This is John and Gordy on WMDX 92.7 and also on your Civic Media app. Check it out and text us or voice note us.
It is 6:52. We have cloudy skies, maybe a scattered shower or a sprinkle during the early going. Mid-50s to start things out. We'll get into low 70s later. Marta Hansen is joining us now. She has the Piano Gal Shop in Sun Prairie. She's a singer and a songwriter, and welcome to the show, Marta.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. So you have a song, and I think, why don't we just play a bit of this first? It's called Bang Bang.
Yes.
And we'll explain a little bit how you came to write this song and why.
Yep.
Okay, so let's go ahead and play that, Dom.
Bang, bang, pack up your
That's just a bit of the song.
That's infectious.
It really is.
It really is a good tune.
Marta, how did you come to write this?
Like I said, I'm a singer-songwriter, and I write what I know, and I write about a lot of social issues. And I've been a volunteer for a national organization, Moms Demand Action, for many years. I'm a state lead volunteer, which is a gun violence prevention organization. Mm-hmm. We work a lot of behind-the-scenes, unglamorous, thankless work with, you know, talking to legislators, working on changing the laws and building awareness and community partnerships and all of the things. And I have kids. I have two teenagers. And I wanted to combine my advocacy with my creativity and my art and write a song about gun violence from the perspective of a parent, of that fear that I truly have every single day taking my kids to school. When it starts off as a regular day and in a blink of an eye, it happens all the time. That parent who dropped their kids off and they get that phone call, they get that text, and they're running to the school wondering if their child is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was under the impression you had written this, you know, in light of the recent shooting at Abundant Life, but you actually wrote this in 2023.
I did. Yeah. I wrote it in response to a different shooting, and it's gained a resurgence since then. And I realized, you know, I wanted to, with, you know, it happening so close to home, I wanted to create a visual with it to maybe inspire more people to get involved, to take action, to volunteer, to donate, to feel, you know, what that must feel like for a parent to go through and for a child to go through. So the video came about, and that's premiering soon.
It's premiering this weekend?
Saturday. Yeah, the video premiere is this Saturday at Beer Rock on Sherman Avenue. And I'll be premiering the music video, and there'll be info table with Moms Demand Action, Be Smart for Gun Safety for Kids, and Focused Interruption, which is a local Madison nonprofit that is a Madison violence prevention organization. And then I'll have also live music from Twyla Bergeron, Steve Baker, and Bear in the Forest, and then myself as well. So pretty exciting. And then it'll be available online for the whole world after the premiere event.
You know, moms have made some great suggestions to the legislature and how to try to help stop a lot of this from happening.
Yeah.
Simply, you know, red flag laws. Mm-hmm. There are so many good suggestions, and yet they have rejected everything. And it's good to have somebody out on the front line trying to change what's happening out there. You know, they'll go in and invade a city simply because an immigrant killed a citizen in this country, but they won't do anything about mass shootings in our schools. And I just watched a video on X where they showed what was going, how they train, how they do this drill that they do, have the kids go through these drills.
Yes. Yep. And which are just traumatic in and of themselves.
Yes. Just watching it. Just watching it was traumatic for me.
It is. And my kids, it's become like a normal part of their adolescence, which is just unacceptable. And there are so many common sense things that we're pushing for every single day that should be done. Sadly, we need more voices to stand up. The more we do, we can change public opinion, and we can, you know, get people, our legislators, to actually do something about it.
We just have a minute left here, so let's recap. Saturday, what time?
Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Beer Rock.
Okay. And if people want to find out more about Moms Demand Action, it's just momsdemandaction.org.
Yes, momsdemandaction.org. And my song is available on Spotify, Apple Music, all streaming platforms. And then it'll be on YouTube, the video, on Children's Film Academy of Madison.
Excellent. Marta Hansen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And stop out at Piano Gal Shop in Sun Prairie sometime. It's a great place you have there.
Thank you. Yes. Appreciate it.
All right, we will continue with more of John and Gordy in the morning. Mike McCabe joins us in our 7 o'clock hour. Stay with us.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. The Trump administration today asked the Congress for more money for security for itself and judges after the killing of Charlie Kirk. The accused killer is due in court Tuesday. Republican Senator John Curtis of Utah asked by ABC's This Week what he makes of the president blaming the radical left.
If it were up to me, I think you need to take the word radical and remove right or left. And radical coming from any direction is not good, it's not healthy, and it should be called out.
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen is calling out President Trump for choosing finger-pointing over uniting Americans, and he called out fellow Democrats as spineless for not endorsing New York City mayoral frontrunners Orhan Mamdani. The Emmys are tonight, and most nominated is the dystopian workplace drama Severance, filmed in an old AT&T office park in New Jersey. Another favorite for best drama is the ER drama The Pitt. This is ABC News.